You are listening to the GeoNiagara Radio Show, sponsored by the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University.
Welcome to episode 4 of the GeoNiagara Radio Show. My name is Darren.
My name is RJ. And this is Earth Week. This is our Earth Week episode.
Yeah, we have a ton of information to share with you at the end of the episode, various events that are happening around the Niagara region. And also, we have show guests lined up for the next couple episodes, so we'll discuss a little bit about them and a little bit about maybe how we record the GeoNiagara Radio Show. Because for those of you who don't know, we pre-record the episodes, mostly due to scheduling availability and things like that. So as we head into episodes 5 and 6, RJ, who has been our editor and recording engineer and pretty much a Jill of all trades when it comes to this show, she will be somewhere up north planting trees. Can you, want to give us a little bit more information about what it is you're going to be doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the summer, I spend my summers tree planting. So I go out Northern Ontario and I plant trees and I am paid on a per tree basis. I earn between 8 and 10 cents per tree. And yeah, that's basically what I do. I just kind of escape from everything and plant some trees.
How is it between 8 and 10 cents per tree?
So basically there's two types of land, and the type of land you're planting on determines the price you get paid per tree. So there's indirect land, which has what's called skidder tracks. So there's actually upturned dirt that we're able to plant in. And then there's direct land, which is land that has been de-stumped but doesn't have any tracks or paths that you follow when you plant. So you plant everywhere, but every tree in every direction has to be 7 feet apart. So that makes direct land a little more difficult because you have to use like land management skills to figure out where you want to put your trees and make the most out of your space so you can get the most amount of trees, aka earning the most amount of money you can.
Is the organization that you do this with, is it like a nonprofit organization or is it a forestry company that you're working for? Because it seems like a great opportunity for summer employment, and it's, dare I say, it's almost like day camp for adults.
We call it day camp for adults ourselves. Like, we have a very good time out there. We live in tents for 2 months, and we pay camp costs. It's a privately owned company. I think what happens is that the government in Ontario deforests the land and then sells that deforest land off to privatized companies like this who buy it to be replanted again, and then they basically sell it back to the government once our planted saplings turn into trees.
Maybe this is something we could put a note in the show notes for, if there are, like, what's the minimum? Is it like 16 years old is the minimum age, or is it mostly like university students that do this?
It's definitely a university crowd, especially because all tree planting seasons in Ontario and BC start in April. So it's definitely designed towards that university crowd. And I think there is a minimum age of 18. You're not with your parents for 2 months, obviously. So there's that sort of stuff. And you have to be physically fit. So it's definitely like a 20, 25-year-old age range that tends to be that perfect tree planting ideal.
I mean, it seems like a terrific opportunity of skill building as well. So we'll put a note in the show notes about it. I'm sure they're looking for young and able-bodied people to plant trees and replenish our forests up north.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be looking forward to telling you all about my adventures when I come back.
Okay. So in episode 4, we decided to switch things up a little bit, and RJ's conducted an interview with Warren Price. I want to give a little bit of background about how we connected with Warren.
Warren's a colleague of my best friend's mom. She has been my best friend since JK. I've probably known her about 16 years, and I've known her mom for about 16 years, and we have connected quite a bit on a love for geography. And when I mentioned to her about this radio show, she was very interested, but had this amazing colleague, Warren, that she wanted to introduce to the show. So that's how Warren and I got connected.
So without further ado, here's our interview with Warren Price.
All right, so we are here today talking with Warren Price. Warren Price is an urban planner in Toronto, but he's involved in a lot of projects to do with Brock University, where we are stationed. First of all, can you tell our listeners about your background as an architect and how you got into your career as a planner and urban designer?
Sure. I started my education at the University of Manitoba, and I received a degree in environmental studies. And then my next degree was actually an architecture degree from the University of Waterloo. And during that time, I worked a lot in different architecture firms in Toronto and on the prairies and in England. But when I finally graduated, I knew that a kind of conventional architecture career wasn't for me. I'd actually grown up in a farm in Saskatchewan, but I'd always loved cities and city life. And so I got a job with my current firm, which I've been with for over 20 years. I began as a junior urban designer, and now I'm a partner with the firm. So it's really, I guess, been an evolution. And the more I learned, the more I realized the dynamics of cities was really very intriguing to me.
Excellent. So through your career, you have a lot of experience in planning for large school campuses, such as Brock University. Of all the types of planning you could do, what was it that attracted you to campus planning?
I still do a wide range of planning and urban design, but most of my work is with post-secondary institutions. And, you know, what I like about universities is that they're almost kind of like a microcosm of a city. People live and work and they hang out there. They have great landscapes and buildings, and there's a full range of kind of infrastructure that supports that. But unlike a city, a university is under the direction of a single administration. That provides a lot more control. You can do a lot more interesting things. And universities are really committed to their campuses and their environments and quality of place in the long term. And you don't always get that with sort of private development. So that's the first reason. The other reason is that it's a really interesting time to be involved with universities. The nature of education is changing a lot. Education and innovation is becoming increasingly important to our future and economic competitiveness. So it's a great time to be part of conversation about those things and how to support the academic mission of the institution. You know, we help institutions make sure they have the right kind of facilities, the right kind of places, the right kind of infrastructure to support what they do.
Do you draw from any particular inspirations when you're campus planning?
Inspirations? You know, there's a lot of great campuses that are inspiring. The University of Virginia is a place I recently had an opportunity to visit, which is an important campus in the history of campus making in North America. We're currently working at Princeton, which is another important campus in the history of campus planning. It actually was the first time the word campus was used to describe a university setting was with Princeton. So there's lots of kind of, I guess, classic campuses that are inspiring. But there's also other places that are inspiring. And indeed, universities are beginning to evolve to be, you know, much more like little villages in many ways. They're much more interested in reaching out to their communities. So it's not just about creating a kind of bucolic campus. There's lots of different models one can think about when kind of imagining the future of a university.
Excellent. So you have worked on our campus at Brock University for several years. What were your main projects in the past, and what sort of things can we expect in the future?
So I've worked with Brock since about 1999, which I was very young back then.
So was I.
Still a long time ago. Our first campus plan was completed for Brock in 2003. And then we did what's called the Facility Needs and Priorities Study, which was completed in 2005. We have recently just done an update to the campus plan, which was completed in 2015. And currently we are doing an update to the facilities planning document. Between those dates, we've done a whole bunch of studies, including landscape studies, study for the location of the General Brock statue, a number of athletic studies. So there's been a lot of work over the years, and we've gotten to know the university quite well throughout that.
What sort of things can we expect to see in the future?
In terms of the future, the university's come through a pretty substantive period of growth over the last couple of decades. I expect the coming years are going to be more about reinvestment and renewal of the existing facilities rather than new growth. So kind of fixing up what the university's already got. And, you know, there's so many changes to the nature of education today that Brock is continuing to ensure that they have the right kind of facility. So it's about renewal and renovation more than just kind of going out and building new.
Sounds good.
Do you just work on the campus proper, or have you done work for like the satellite stuff, like Marilyn I. Walker and things like that?
For the Marilyn Walker, I'm a campus designer, but I'm also an urban designer, and my firm does a lot of planning. So what we did for the Marilyn Walker project is we did a site evaluation study. So we looked at downtown St. Catharines, and we looked at a whole range of sites that could be considered for the location. And we did kind of a pros and cons assessment of how each site could contribute not only to the success of the center, but also help advance the revitalization of downtown St. Catharines. So we've been involved with that too.
Well, that's really great to hear, especially for the revitalizing of downtown. I think it's been an excellent addition to the St. Catharines area. What are the most challenging aspects of designing a campus, and what has been challenging about Brock University?
Every institution is different. There's always similarities in terms of supporting community, finding the right kind of quality and character for the landscape. Consultation is a big part of all of our work. So engaging with the campus community and ensuring the plan really support the institution's needs. Those are kind of common themes throughout a lot of our work. One of the things that's really specific about Brock and has been a bit challenging is just how interconnected Brock is. It's essentially, you know, kind of one big building. You know, when you think of a university campus, often you think of a bunch of individual buildings kind of nestled within the landscape. Where Brock, in many ways, is one big building set on the Niagara Escarpment. And it's kind of hardwired. It's so kind of interconnected. It's like a solid-state circuit. It's difficult to kind of change one individual piece of the campus without impacting something else. So it makes planning challenging because of how kind of interconnected various buildings are.
I appreciate that, because as a student at Brock, it's so nice having all of those buildings interconnected, but I understand what a challenge that would be as an urban designer trying to plan for all of those hallways that connect to each other.
It actually does create a great environment. You know, it makes it easy to move around in cold weather. It makes the buildings really accessible, easy for differently abled people to move around. But as the institution has grown, the kind of streets and the corridor spaces internally have become very kind of congested. When we first started working at Brock, we kind of told them the story that they were like a house where somebody just kept adding bedrooms, and eventually you couldn't get everybody through the front door anymore. And so they realized they needed to create new entrances and new ways through the building because, you know, the kind of internal infrastructure of the campus had in a sense become overwhelmed.
That's a great analogy. Do students have opportunities to voice their input for the campus plans?
Absolutely. There are always student representatives on our steering committees. Usually there's a graduate and undergraduate student president. And so there's formal engagement with the students. We usually interview students, too, part of our campus planning initiatives right up front whenever we start a project. There's a more informal aspect to our student engagement. So we almost always have at least one, if not more, open houses. So these are kind of planning events where we put up display panels and we invite the entire community in to review and comment on the work at key strategic milestones to ensure we're getting the right input and that we're on the right direction and that everybody's informed. And at the end of the process, things usually go up on a website so people can see where we've gotten to.
Excellent. While designing Brock, what sort of environmental or ecological considerations did you take into account, if any?
Sustainability has been really important from the university from day one, really, and it's only continued to become even more and more important for the university. And I would say this is everybody from the senior administration right through to faculty and students. There are three ways that I think the campus planning for Brock has really reflected this interest in sustainability. The first is really the protection of the natural setting. It's really a remarkable natural setting that Brock occupies on the escarpment. But, you know, way back in 1999, when we started work, a lot of that environment had started to be degraded, that there were simple practices like lawn mowing. There's a great deal of things like kind of cutting down the natural environment, trying to control it. And a lot of the kind of quality of the campus was the strong concrete architecture set into a natural world. And that kind of interplay was being lost even. So there was an environmental reason to restore the natural habitat as well as an aesthetic reason. So the campus plan has put in place landscape management practices that promote the preservation of habitat, that promote the planting of indigenous materials, and really kind of restores this original relationship to the remarkable setting that the campus occupies. The second way that sustainability is important is through the promotion of alternatives to the private automobile. You know, Brock is in a really suburban location, so there has to be some reliance on the automobile. But again, kind of looking back to the changes from 1999, you know, the presence of transit and cyclists and other modes of moving beyond the private automobile are really quite present on the campus today. It's become a big part of the campus experience. So the campus has really promoted alternatives to the private automobile. And then the last thing is really kind of promoting compact campus. A university that kind of limits its land consumption is more efficient with resources such as energy and space. So keeping people together, not sprawling, is a good way to be sustainable as well.
I love how compact our campus is. Like, I know many friends at other universities that definitely do complain about how far they have to walk every day just to get between classes.
Absolutely, yeah.
So relating back to the discipline of geography, what is something about urban planning that you could tell us that the average citizen would have never considered and be surprised to find out?
We actually have the very original campus plan that was used to guide the very first development of the university here in our office. And it's a really interesting document to kind of look back on and to understand some of the things that people were preoccupied with when designing a new university campus. And one of the things that I was kind of most struck by is that they spent a lot of time kind of describing and documenting this kind of wonderful setting on the Niagara Escarpment, and including this little creek that kind of led up to and, of course, kind of cascaded over the escarpment. But what they decided to do was they actually put the building, the Thistle Complex and the Schwann Tower, right on top of the creek. So somehow they felt that that move was kind of, I guess, celebrating nature. And the idea was that you would be able to kind of follow the creek kind of through the Thistle Complex and back to the escarpment, where you would then kind of experience it falling over the escarpment. So you can see remnants of this creek. There's the little gully just to the west of the General Brock sculpture. And indeed, when it rains, you can see the water kind of coming out of the rock and falling over the escarpment. But I think the kind of, in the end, their move of building the big tower and all the concrete kind of negated this kind of gentle little water feature that had really been there. But underneath the dining hall in the lower level of the complex, there's actually a little stream that still is buried there. In a sense, it's the reason why the university is where it is.
I had no idea. That's really interesting to learn. Well, I think that about concludes the interview. Thank you so much for joining us, Warren.
Yeah, well, it was a really great pleasure to talk to you guys, and I look forward to tuning into your future broadcast. Thank you.
Thinking of pursuing a career in the field of geography or tourism? The Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University offers 3 and 4 year bachelor's degrees and a geography graduate program, each with several study options. At Brock University, you'll get an excellent education with hands-on experience through internships, study abroad programs, co-op, labs, seminars, and more. Explore the world through your studies. come to Brock and experience the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies today. Check us out at brocku.ca/geotour.
Well, that was an awesome interview with Warren. I learned so much about the Brock campus. There's things in that interview that I would never even have thought of, especially when he was talking about the stream that goes underneath. It was Thistle, I guess it would be.
Yeah, I guess it goes through under the Schmond Tower, like right in the middle of Brock.
I bet you if they had a choice to redesign that all over again, they would, to have that nice natural water feature going right through the university. That would have been really, really cool. It would be like a Zen garden right in the middle of Brock University. So that wraps us up for episode 4. Want to share some Earth Day events, considering this is our Earth Week episode. On Friday, April the 21st, from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m., there's the Earth Day Expo at the St. Catharines Farmers Market. Saturday, April the 22nd, 2017, is actually Earth Day itself. Also on the 22nd, the City of St. Catharines has their 2017 spring cleanup. And so I encourage everybody to, if you want to be involved in some cleanup events, visit the City of St. Catharines website. And actually, any municipal website will have a link to their Earth Day events and their community cleanup days. Wednesday, April the 26th is Richter Scale Day. So if you're right into earthquakes and such, that's the day for you. And I discovered... let me just pull up my cell phone here. On April the 28th at 7 p.m. at the Yerich Auditorium at Niagara College, it's Ask a Storm Chaser. So I'm taking my youngest son to this, Deegan, because he absolutely loves extreme weather. I took the picture and I was going to write the website down, but the picture's blurry where the website is. But that website will be in the show notes for you to register for the event. It's absolutely free to attend. So I think that would be like a really cool, they have Mark Robinson from the Weather Network is going to be part of the panel. So really excited about that.
That is so cool. I did not know that was a thing. That's amazing.
On Saturday, April the 29th, Niagara Falls, the Park and the City Committee is having their tree seedling sale. And again, we'll have a link to the show notes about that. Saturday, May the 6th, is Niagara Falls Community Clean Sweep between 9 a.m. and noon. Again, visit the Niagara Falls Municipal website, and there will be a link there. Tuesday, May 9th, is Public Gardens Day. So I'm not sure if that actually means just like horticultural gardens or if that means like urban farming. I'm sure it could be both. Why not? Wednesday, May the 10th, is Mother Ocean Day.
What is Mother Ocean Day?
Mother Ocean Day is a day that is long overdue. It was actually started in 2013 by the South Florida Kayak Fishing Club. In case anybody's wondering where we get these days from, there is a website called daysoftheyear.com. So what I usually do is I sort of go through the months and see what the geographically inspired days of the year are to share with our listenership. And finally, moving on, Friday, the May the 19th is Bike to Work Day. So if you have a bike, or I guess it could be Bike to School Day as well. So participate in that. And those are our events for episode 4. We are very happy to be able to announce to you that we have our guests lined up for episodes 5 and episode 6. Episode 5 will be airing on May the 17th. And our guests will be Travis Gelati and Tyson Morelli from Principal Point Geospatial, based out of Hamilton. They are a nonprofit organization that promotes the use of geospatial technologies, but also in the realms of UAVs. So if you're interested in UAVs and flying them and regulations and things like that, I encourage you to tune into that episode. On the 21st of June, episode 6 will be airing, and our guest on that will be Marilyn Jolyneau, who is an associate professor at Brock University in the Geography and Tourism Department. She is also a remote sensing professional, so I'm sure she'll be sharing tons of information about what it's like to be a remote sensing specialist. And as always, if you want to contact us, you can reach us via Twitter at GeoNiagara, or you can join us on our Facebook page, GeoNiagara Radio Show.
That's right.
And I think that wraps us up for episode 4. And as we mentioned before, well, RJ will be with us in spirit and on audio for episodes 5 and 6. Have a spectacular time planting trees up in northern Ontario. Drop us a note on the Facebook page to say hi and share the radio show with all of your colleagues up there. We're looking forward to some stories when you get back that you can share. Or what happens up in the woods stays in the woods?
There's definitely a little what goes up north stays up north, but there's definitely some stories I'll be willing to share when I get back.
All right. Again, thanks everybody for listening, and look forward to hearing from you. And join us again on the 17th of May for episode 5 of the GeoNiagara Radio Show on 103.7 CFPU.
You have been listening to the GeoNiagara Radio Show, sponsored by the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University.